In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan Shot today.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming alive for the Built Ford Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. And wherever you are in the free Odyssey app, good Friday morning, a feel-good football Friday, a feel-good Boomer and Geo live Friday, as we will be out there in Huntington at the Paramount tonight. So double duty for us. Everybody's in a good mood here. Everybody is feeling themselves, smelling themselves. Even though we got a windy, cold, rainy day, we'll be bringing feel-good Friday vibes to you in your car or wherever you're at. Had a football game last night that got entertaining late. We'll talk to Jerry about that in a few minutes during his update. But you had some local football stuff that was actually interesting yesterday, believe it or not. Daniel Jones comes out with a prepared statement, essentially says goodbye to the Giants and their fans and the organization, knowing that he's never going to see the field again. And then you had Rex Ryan, who's been talking about it. He's been implying. He's been saying things, dropping hints here or there. Go full give me the job, Woody. Full I'm taking this Jet job. If I'm the guy, you know I'm the guy. Give it to me again, as he goes on ESPN Radio yesterday and basically says that I'm better than any candidate, including John Gruden. He mentioned his name. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, G. I'm doing all right, and not happy about the Rangers losing last night, but I'll get over that. But you would think that if you're going to try to do something, if you're Rex, this is typical Rex. I mean, it's just out there. I mean, he puts himself out there. He is aggressive about it. He, you know, and then all of a sudden you start seeing some of the old Hard Knocks clips come back and everything else, and you feel like, man, this guy can do it. This guy can do it. And there was one thing I will say about him. He is passionate. There's no question about it. And for some reason, players react to him. And I think a lot of that is obviously the message, the way that he delivers his message. It's a little bit different than the way Mike Tomlin delivers his message. Mm. But nonetheless, when you're in a room with Rex Ryan, that's a man's room. You know what I'm saying? With man stuff going on. There's no snowflake in that room. You cannot be a guy that is going to be triggered by something that may be said in a room that is going to be off color, that's going to be maybe a little bit off-putting, but you know what? He is going to challenge you. Mm. And he's going to tell you how great you are and how great the team is. And that's one of the reasons why he was so successful the first time he was here.
Yeah, and I love his personality. I loved his tenure with the Jets, even not being a Jet fan. I love what he said yesterday. I just don't think it's a good idea to go back to that. And it's almost like resurrecting the only good time that you have had as a Jet fan in a long time. Like, just trying to go back there to squeeze more out of that happiness when we are a long way away
from that. I mean, we're talking, you know, 14, 15 years from when we were talking about the Jets in the AFC Championship games with Rex Ryan as the head coach. So I just don't know if that's going to work. And I heard Jerry talking about it with Al this morning saying, man, he's going to get that defense to play well. All right, you would assume so. But tell me if I'm wrong about this, because you'll know a hell of a lot more about this than I would. Rex Ryan, since he's been a head coach in the NFL, there's been a lot of things that have changed with offenses and the rules and everything else. So if he comes out of ESPN, I don't know if he's sitting there watching film every day like John Gruden's watching film every day. I don't know if he's doing that. But I know he's on ESPN and he's talking and he's around the game. But there are guys now like Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Kevin O'Connell, Ben Johnson, that I feel like if Rex comes back and tries to do the same stuff that he was doing back then, are going to run circles around him.
Yeah, but here's the thing about Rex that I will tell you 100%. I'm watching him coach the Jets. The players played for him, you know, and a lot of playing defense, and there are schemes and different things that you have to do and to counterattack what opposing offenses are doing, especially the high-level offenses. And all those high-level offenses, by the way, they all have great players playing for them. And, you know, they have top-quality quarterbacks. They got wide receivers. They got running backs. They got the high-end offensive lines. And, you know, there's only so much you can do defensively to stifle that. But the one thing that you can do, and I think, you know, Bart Scott used to tell me this about Rex all the time, that the guys would run through a wall for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that is something that I actually thought that Rob Saleh had that when he first got here with the Jets, that the guys really liked him and then they wanted to play for him. And the defense certainly, you know, played the way that you would expect them to play for a defense coordinator who had success in San Francisco. And you would think that he would know players and what type of players he would want on his defense. And I felt like they were building towards that. But he never had a quarterback, never had an offense. And I would also say that, you know, Rex never really had a top flight offense either. It was always about defense and
running the ball.
Ground and pound.
Yep.
Ground and pound, ground and pound. And the one real area where I felt like he mishandled things was with Mark Sanchez, because I thought he babied Mark Sanchez. Remember, he called him the Sanchez and all this other crap. And they went on a game. They played a game in Baltimore and they got their asses kicked. And Mark looked like he was spooked.
Yeah.
He really did. He looked like Sam Darnold against the New England Patriots, where he was seeing ghosts.
Yeah.
And there's one thing I do know about a quarterback is that you got to put him right back up on the horse the next week. And even if your team was going to lose, I wanted him to throw the ball 50 times. I just wanted him to throw the ball 50 times. And Rex basically took the ball out of his hands. Mm. And, you know, they won that way, and it was fine. But in this day and age, it's really hard to try to win every game that way. Like, it just... You got to have guys that are going to throw the ball down the field and are going to have a quarterback that can handle it. If he comes back here to the Jets, no matter who the coach of the Jets is going to be next year, what is the quarterback situation?
Yeah, and that's obviously a huge question going forward for both of the franchises here. But first, I think you need to establish the general manager, head coach situation. The culture that is there is a huge part of that. And I know the quarterback goes hand in hand with all of that. But it's a tough situation.
Now, the other thing, too, let me just say this one thing. The one thing about Rex, and I could just see this, whoever the GM is, if they decide to interview Rex, bring Rex in, he's going to say all the right things. I'm a Jet. I bleed green. I believe in this franchise. I can turn this franchise around. The fans love me. And I 100% check, 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 check. Then all of a sudden the season starts. Crappy quarterback play. This is where the divide starts to happen in the building. You didn't get me a quarterback. How am I supposed to win with this crap? You know, and that's the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And I just say, and that's where the intensity gets to be more of the story than the actual field, the play on the field and winning on the field. It's about the interpersonal relationships that go haywire because they can't win.
All right, so we lived the Rex thing, and there's fond memories there, and everybody harkens back to the nostalgia of the great Jet teams during that time. Don't really remember the end of it. Don't really talk about his tenure with the Bills. So I'm going to bring you back to one of these other times that something like this happened. And so he referenced yesterday in that interview, he's like, yeah, you know, people say it doesn't happen a lot, guy going back to the job. But when it does, you know, it's worked out. So I was thinking, like, well, what's he talking about? So I go and I go back to Joe Gibbs, because Joe Gibbs was the one to me that you that would be the best example of this.
John Gruden.
Right, going back to the Raiders, but it ended so weird. You know what I'm saying? He never got a chance to finish that. It was just like, it just was strange. But I think the best example would be of Joe Gibbs, because it's the same, you know, the same organization, and he got 4 years, four full years of being the head coach back in Washington. Do you remember when they rehired him in 2004 after him not coaching that team in Washington since 1992, what your take on it was? Were you like, this is stupid, this is not going to work, or did you like it?
I think Joe Gibbs was so highly respected that everybody felt like they wanted to give him a chance.
Now, this is a guy who won three Super Bowls.
I think that that organization was in such a state of flux.
Well,
it's very similar. But my feeling was Rex, I don't know how people view him. I know how I view him as a coach. Like, I would hate to play against him. He'd be a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And I know he's bombastic, and I know that, you know, the last few years on ESPN, he's not afraid to say things, which means he's good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he's ready to, you know, throw some red meat out there, which I can appreciate. That's not who Joe Gibbs was. Joe Gibbs was a highly respected religious guy. Who won, with the Redskins, the former, you know, the Redskin team, and the players admired him. The fan base loved him, and I think they hired him because they wanted somebody with credibility standing on the sideline to kind of reengage the fan base. If I remember right.
Okay. Well, that sounds like this, right? This is somebody.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like Rex. I'm sure there are coaches out there that are laughing at this.
Well, yeah.
I don't think anybody was laughing at. At Joe Gibbs, because of the respect that everybody had for him.
I also think that the Jets overrate that time because their history has been such crap. You know, like Joe Gibbs was a three-time Super Bowl champion as a head coach. Like Rex Ryan went to back-to-back AFC Championship games, which in Jets history is a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot.
But not to beat on Mark Sanchez, but they had games where he was pretty good, but he wasn't the guy that they thought they were drafting.
So Joe Gibbs, when he came back in 2004, he had four full seasons. 6-10, then 10-6, then 5-11, then 9-7, and he was done. So he had two losing seasons and then two winning seasons, was over.
Do you know who their quarterback was back then?
The 2007...
Was that the Gus Frerotte years?
2000, hold on. It was... Wow. Oh, my goodness. Jason Campbell.
Oh, they drafted... That's right. He was drafted.
Jason Campbell was the guy back in his last year. Let's see. 2006, was it still Campbell? Kicking, punting, defense. Where the hell's the quarterback? Mark Brunell was there, and Jason Campbell. They both played in 2006. 05, when they were 10-6 in 05, it was Mark Brunell, and he started 15 games.
He had a pretty good season, if I remember.
Yeah. So, veteran quarterback, 10-6. And they had a good year that year.
I mean, I think Rex sees this defense, and I think he sees really good players on this team. And they may not be playing like it right now, and there is a lot of criticism to go around, both offensively and defensively. But I think he sees a reasonably good roster. I don't think you'd have to change that much, but I don't know. I don't know if Woody's going to go down that road again.
But he loved him, so I would not. And this is not me saying that I don't like Rex. I really do like Rex, and I enjoy him, and those times were great. I just think it feels pathetic to go back into your history when the last time you felt good and then take that coach and spit him out 15 years later and think it's going to work again. Sorry, it's not. Like, that time was that time.
I'll tell you, he was pretty convincing yesterday.
He's great at that. There's no doubt he's great at selling himself. But he brings up, you know, I'll be better than John Gruden. What separates me is because, you know, I'm a Jet and those guys are not, and give me a break. I mean, I just...
Oh, so the John Gruden thing is actually catching, fire now.
Well, apparently enough for Rex Ryan to reference it in that interview. So, yeah. I mean,
well, but, you know, the reason is you and I both feel like they have to have some sort of major presence at the head coaching position. They just can't have a guy that's coming off of the Houston staff, you know, the Tampa staff.
Oh, if they hire one of those guys, I'm going to be relentless. I'm just absolutely will be relentless. Like, I'm going to tell whoever that person is, I'm going to reach out and I'm going to say, rent, don't buy. You know, just do not buy a house. I'll give you all the examples of what happened with Rob Saleh. Like, and I mean, even before that guy takes that job, we're like, do you want your career to end now? Like, is it important for you to collect that check on that 5-year contract after coaching for 2 or 3 years and have that money and set your family up? Because it is, and I'm not going to knock you for it. But your career will end. Like, you're probably not going to get another shot at a head coaching job. Like, Todd Bowles did after he left here.
But Bowles kind of inherited that job down in Tampa when Bruce Arians left. He was Bruce Arians' defensive coordinator.
Right. But Adam Gase, no. I would be surprised if Rob Saleh got another chance of being a head coach. He'll get a defensive coordinator job like that. But I don't think he'll be a head coach again. So, yeah, I mean, if you want your one shot as a head coach to be the head coach of the Jets, then go ahead and do it. But you'll never get another opportunity after they fire you in 2 years.
There's going to be most likely at least 6 head jobs open. So, which means that Rob Saleh will definitely get interviews for those jobs.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Here's another thing, too, that I've kind of deduced. That even though the Christopher Johnson era had Adam Gase involved, and that was the worst situation, and that press conference was the worst press conference in the history of press conferences, and you can't convince me otherwise, because you had Christopher Johnson saying that he's coaching where football is going, which is a line that has stuck with this franchise for a long time, and you had Adam Gase having a full-blown crack meltdown in front of the cameras with his eyes darting all over the place. It was the worst press conference ever. Yeah. But what I feel is that during that time, at the very least, Christopher Johnson let the guys in the building do their job, where he was hands-off, and he loved the talking to the players. We actually had a lunch with him once. He talked about how much he appreciated the players, but he wouldn't meddle and he wouldn't get involved in football decisions. And he let those guys work. So if Woody goes back and takes a job within the Trump administration again, I do think that Christopher Johnson a second time around, I want to look at the positive there as opposed to the negative with the Adam Gase hire and say, I at least know that Christopher, way more than Woody, as the Johnson around, will let those guys do their job.
Well, especially after all the reports that are now coming out about all these decisions that supposedly Woody had a hand in since January.
Yep.
So I understand where there is a lot of frustration when it comes to Jet fans and their ownership. That's how I felt about the Knicks for years and years and years until ultimately Jim Dolan finally found the right guy to run the team, and it took some patience. Because initially we weren't hearing from Leon Rose at all. Remember, there was no contact with the press, nothing. He
did that one interview with Mike Breen and he sounded lost. And I was like, oh my God, this is another guy who's going to get swallowed up. And I was wrong.
Yeah, well, he waited and waited and waited. And then he finally pounced on Jalen Brunson. They made the trade for Hart. They made the trade for OG Anunoby. They were building with draft picks, trading away some draft picks. And then of course, they make the trade for Carl Anthony Towns. And here we are, but it's taken us like 5 years to get here.
Well, yeah, and even long, yeah, in the Leon Rose
administration. Right. Yes, it's taken a while. We had to be patient. Eventually, they were going to get their stars.
Yes, they did. So you would rehire Rex?
I would consider it, for sure. I wouldn't. I'm not going to sit here and just absolutely say no to it. I got to see who the other candidates are.
Yeah.
I'm asking you this. I don't know who these guys are. I'm not going to give you any names. I'm just going to give you hypotheticals. And the hypotheticals would be a Cardinal defensive coordinator.
No.
Or Rex. Listen. A Cardinal defensive coordinator or Rex Ryan.
Rex Ryan.
All right. A Kansas City offensive coordinator or Rex Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Rex Ryan.
A Tampa Bay special teams coach or Rex Ryan.
Right, no, I get the point. I am not hiring those a first-time head coach who's a coordinator. I would hire John Gruden and I would hire Brian Flores over Rex Ryan.
What about Mike Vrabel?
I would hire Mike Vrabel, but Mike Vrabel's not going to come anywhere. He's going to look at this job like a nuclear reactor that melted down that he's going to get some sort of radiation from.
How about Bill O'Brien?
Huh.
I like that.
I would hire Bill O'Brien before I'd hire Rex.
He's at BC right now.
I know. Yeah, I actually would. Because I think I prefer.
I'm not saying that Bill O'Brien would want to come back. I'm just giving you a potential college coach that probably, I can't speak for Bill. I like Bill a lot. I really do. But, you know, this college situation
tough.
That these guys are dealing with on a daily basis, you know, he benches a quarterback last week and a quarterback quits on the team. Mm. I mean, could you imagine that?
Well, we've seen it. I mean, with this new landscape. So, yeah, I would throw, if I'm the Johnson family, I'm throwing as much money as possible at John Gruden first. And then if he doesn't want it or he takes another job, then I'm bringing Brian Flores in and I'm making sure that he's ready for something like this. And then after that, yeah, I mean, I would have to start considering Rex after that, even though it's not something that I want to do. But more important than anything is identity with this franchise.
And
who
are they? Well, that's one thing that Rex has in spades over everybody else.
Yep, that's fair.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
There.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Feel Good Football Friday on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Between 8 and 9 a.m. this morning, we're giving away Post Malone tickets at Citi Field in June. So that's going to be a hot ticket. That's a win it before you could buy it situation, as they're not going on sale until Tuesday. This is Boomer and Geo Live Day in Huntington. And speaking of tickets there, I think there's like 25 or 35 tickets left that are up there that have like a same day price deal on it. I looked this morning. It was like they knocked it down as like day of event pricing. So you can grab some of that if you want. And it's going to be unbelievable.
It's going to be a hell of a night, man. It's going to be a hell of a night. The weather's perfect for a night inside. And we'll have a great time.
Yes,
for sure.
And Jose Iglesias performing OMG at the end of this show and part of our meet and greet as well. We'll have, for you Islander fans out there, we're going to be trotting out Cal Clutterbuck and Josh Bailey, and they're going to be shooting some stuff on the stage. Sean Morash will be there, of course, so this is going to be a really good one tonight at the Paramount. Hope to see you there. And before and after, check out our buddies at the Tap Room right across the the street there as well. All right, Jerry, what's going on in sports?
We are brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. We're also brought to you by Flag and Anthem, real close for real life. We start with the Thursday night game and the way most people thought it would go, that the Steelers would go in and just clobber the Browns 2-8. Steelers 8-2 just beat the Ravens last week. Jameis Winston on Amazon Prime. How do you beat Pittsburgh? This was pregame.
The horse is prepared for battle, but victory comes from the Lord. So I'm depending on the Lord.
So then, Kaylee Hartung with a follow-up question.
Weather conditions tonight. We're expecting winds up to 15 miles per hour in a wintry mix. How will that impact your ability to throw the ball?
I am so happy and grateful that the Lord has blessed me to play in some snow, to be in true football weather in Cleveland, Ohio, Huntington Bank Field today to get him the glory. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, the Lord was really interested in Huntington Bank Field.
Yeah, for sure.
But I have to tell you, my Fox weather guys who are all over it, they said there was going to be some lake effect snow, and sure enough, late in this game, if you didn't see it, it was a wintry mix, and it was snow everywhere, and
it was a blizzard.
There is nothing better than playing in those conditions.
Really?
It was so much fun.
Okay.
Well,
I would have thought as a quarterback who loved throwing the ball that you wouldn't like that.
Well, they threw the ball.
They threw the ball fine. I'm telling you, it slows down the pass rush.
Okay, true.
That's the one thing. And then you don't have a problem gripping the ball. I mean, the wind was a little bit whippy last night, but man, it's nothing better than playing like in footing like that, and it just brings you back to being a kid again.
Well, here was the go-ahead score in the snow on Browns radio.
Shotgun from the two, Chubb the back. Jameis the snap. Give to Chubb. Chubb running. Chubb, touchdown. Nick Chubb did it. He stayed on his feet. The Browns take the lead. 57 seconds to go, and the Browns lead the Steelers 24-19.
Chubb's stand up.
Chubb's.
Yeah, Chubb Insurance.
Chubby Chaser.
Didn't we have Chubbs come yesterday?
Yeah, Chubbs Meats game yesterday.
Chubby Stick.
Yeah.
It was very good, too.
Oh, my goodness. They had all these like Thanksgiving-inspired things.
I get Chubbtastic candy. Yeah.
Man, Chubbs was chubbing us up yesterday, boy. In a big way.
Looks like a chubby.
I mean, Chubbs was giving us feds.
Chubbs.
Making us go federal out there with their strombolis.
See, but playing in that kind of weather, like, you can see the defense just can't anchor themselves.
Yeah. Big dudes, man.
Yeah.
Slippery surfaces.
Yep. And both quarterbacks played reasonably well. They got through for a lot of yards.
24-19 the final. Cleveland beat Pittsburgh. Here was Kevin Stefanski postgame.
That was a unbelievable atmosphere for a football game. Our fans were unbelievable. Maybe believable, just how incredible they were from the jump. And then the snow globe. It's a special night for our fans, and I think they deserve it.
A rare win on the season. It's been a bad season for Cleveland, but a really good night last night. Here was Jameis Winston. This is a little long, but just talking about how amazing the night was.
That fourth quarter, it really was like it was a whole paradigm shift. Like, we were playing so well offensively, and then bang, bang, back-to-back drives with turnovers. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. Like, this is really an NFL's film moment. The snow starts pouring down. It starts getting, like, my feet started getting heavy because I'm squishing through the snow. And, man, it was so good. And it was so great.
There's your jet quarterback for next year.
Him
and Rex.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Jameis and Rex, wild blueberries. Yeah, that would be something else.
I love onions.
Yeah. Jameis.
Miles Garrett, 3 sacks. I think they were all in the first half, but he was pretty good. Jerry Jeudy, 6 catches for 85 yards. On the other side, sour grapes perhaps from George Pickens.
Conditions played a huge, huge part in today's game. I don't really think the Cleveland Browns are a good team at all. I think the conditions kind of saved them today.
They saved them. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this guy says whatever's on his mind, and I appreciate that, but obviously you can't say that after a loss, and Mike Tomlin's probably going to have a talk with him.
You would think so.
Again.
Yeah, again.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. The Giants had a talking to a Daniel Jones, as we know. He's now way down on a depth chart, so yes, he did read. It was really sad, actually.
Yeah,
I felt bad for him.
I know.
He did read a prepared statement because, as he said, he wanted to say the right things the right way, and he did thank the organization.
The opportunity to play for the New York Giants was truly a dream come true, and I'm extremely grateful to the Mara and Tisch families for the chance to play here. The Giants are truly a first-class organization, and I have nothing but genuine respect and appreciation for the people who have built it and who helped carry on that tradition.
And he did take questions. He spoke for about 2 minutes from the prepared statement.
Got choked up twice.
He did.
Yeah, I would just say, It's not over by any stretch of the imagination. He's 27 years old. He's 6'5", 6'6". He's a great athlete. He'll get another chance somewhere else.
But hopefully. It's over here.
Yeah, it's over here. I mean, it's kind of like Russell Wilson in Denver. It was kind of like what happened to Sam Darnold down in Carolina. Eventually, he'll land somewhere. And hopefully, he picks the right place. And he'll have an opportunity to restart his career. That's basically what's going to happen. But it's going to be for a lot less money. And he's going to have to eat a little bit of humble pie, which he did yesterday.
He did.
And I respect that and appreciate that. You know, I guess the difference between Derek Carr and the Raiders when it happened with them is that Derek Carr was not nearly as understanding as Daniel is.
Well, I'm sure. But Derek Carr also had a little bit more success than Daniel Jones had. Imagine us next year, August of 2025. We're at Florham Park, Boomer and Geo live at Jets camp, and coming up now, the Jets' new quarterback, Daniel Jones.
Yes, I could see that.
And we just started all over again in Florham Park.
It would be better to have a camera in Bradley Beach when Al's head explodes.
Just can't get away from him.
I would say that if you compare his and Sam Darnold's career path, it's very similar in terms of the numbers, and now Daniel's going to go into that blender. Well, somebody will want him. Somebody will give him a chance, just like somebody gave Drew Locke a chance but didn't put him on the field.
That's right. And Pete Hoffman, very sad because Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, both gone. So he can't say those names anymore.
That Daniel Jones is not gone yet.
Was that Mike Tyson?
I was trying to do my best imitation of Big Tongue.
That was a pretty good Tyson.
It was. I said it more Tyson than it did Pete.
I thought it did.
Okay.
That was funny.
But you mentioned Rex. Here he was on ESPN Radio. You better not be starting over there, Jets.
I look at it this way. Blow it up. We're going to blow the opponents up. There's way too much talent on this team to play the way we've been playing. Period.
He says, I am built for this team.
That's what's going to separate me from all these other guys you're going to bring in. You know, your Grudens, your whoever, whatever. Give me a break. They ain't New York Jets. I'm all about the Jets.
He says, I'm your guy.
When I look around, I know nobody's better than me.
Good for him, man.
Yeah. Well, the fact that he mentioned John Gruden, though, makes him think that he's thinking about that.
Well, he's probably had the conversation on ESPN on TV.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's everywhere at this point. I just wonder if Gruden's going to be coveted by multiple organizations. That's because the whole crux of my argument was the fact that no one was going to want him. And then ever since then, it's like he's everywhere. He's the apple of everybody's eye. Barstool hires him. And now he's like, he's back.
Yep. Aaron Judge is back as MVP in the American League. He accepted the award, talked about the time he put in, blah,
I was
blah,
hoping
blah.
He would decline it, actually.
He was, very good point. They asked him about moving from right field to center field and doing it willingly, and he says, of course.
I just want what's best for the team. So I said, hey, I'll play center field for us, whatever we need, as long as you guys need me out there. You know, I'll play left, I'll play right, you know, whatever gives us the best lineup. And especially when you go out and get a guy like Juan Soto, you know, I think the most important thing is you want that guy to feel comfortable. And when he's comfortable, you're going to see what he does, which is what he did this year.
We'll see if he's back. We don't know. And in the National League, Shohei Ohtani wins as expected. St. John's played Baylor last night.
Yeah.
They had many opportunities to win this game. We take it to double overtime where Zubi Echefor had 22 points to lead St. John's, but up two with 4 seconds to go, missed not one, but missed two free throws. And the second one led to this. This game was on CBS Sports Network, by the way. And this was John Minko on Learfield Radio.
The dramatics come to this. 4.1, St. John's 98, Baylor 96. Echefor with one more free throw attempt. Bounces the ball, rotates, shoots, and short! And the rebound comes down to O'Meara with 3-2, and Roach for three at the buzzer. It's good! Jeremy Roach hits the home run shot, and it's Baylor that escapes!
Yeah, with the...
better that it happens now.
No more getting stiff.
Then in March. I mean, you know, honestly, they'll learn from this. I mean, that was a great game last night.
No, I know, but I mean, just to have an early season win like that over the 13th-ranked team, and you just would have been taken more seriously.
Taken more seriously. They will be taken seriously. You know,
how this stuff works.
I know,
though,
but
man.
I'm just
people
telling you.
They're going to look at that and be like, oh, okay. Well,
they're 22
but they
now.
Lost to Baylor. You know,
you're right. In March, they will.
That's what they're going to look at.
They're not going to be like, well, remember that was on a buzzer beat. Like, well, you know, when they played the good teams, they didn't win and they lost to Baylor.
Right.
And that's why they're going to get kept out of the tournament. So it's like,
it doesn't matter
if
you win in November. Just win.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
If they win the next game and they go to 5-1, I could see actually see them moving up in the rankings because of this game.
Well, it brings up an interesting question. How does a team respond after a loss like this, which was a question posed to Rick Pitino last night after the game?
How do you think they'll respond tomorrow?
I don't know. Zach, don't ask me stupid questions, please, because how am I going to know something like that?
Based on how you guys
respond. I don't know, Zach. I can't tell you how people are going to respond in bed on a double overtime loss. Obviously, they're going to be major disappointed. I don't know.
Rick, I know it's a tough time to ask this, but the value of a game like this for your team going forward to be tested and in a battle like this.
The only time it's value is when you win. When you lose, there's no value to it.
Oh, there's value to it. Come on, man.
Oh, yeah.
Work on your free throws.
He's pissed.
They're going to be working on their free throws is what they're going to be doing.
They do that already.
Hey, you know what? It's all right to get a little nicked up. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, like, they busted their ass. The guy misses two free throws and end of game. Done.
Yeah.
You learn. And you know what? That was a great game against a great team. And, you know, let's see what happens when they meet maybe in April.
That exchange between Rick Pitino and that reporter about that stupid question reminded me of the warm-up show earlier this week. You're stupid. No, you're stupid.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you say things. The Flames beat the Rangers 3-2. The Red Wings double the Islanders 2-1. And the Devils beat the Hurricanes 4-2.
All right, thank you, Jerry. It is Boomer and Geo coming to you live at the Built Ford Tough Studio.
How does that feel to Cubs fans today? They don't care that they won one World Series.
Oh,
or
sure
got
you
one.
Do. Oh, no, that's not true. They gave you a mag. You can wave your hand all you want. They gave you
stupid.
A... No, it's not stupid. You're stupid.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So, you know, Stu Feiner's a guy who's been around. You know, Craig and him had a friendship. Me and Stu had a falling out. Now we've got a friendship. So Stu Feiner, he offered his services to us and for Boomer and Geo Live. And he said that he would like to wear the ball hammock pouch underwear with nothing else on the stage.
Well, why are we doing that to people?
And I said, I said, Stu, I love you, but just enjoy the show from your seat.
Yeah.
You know? Like we had, and the people that are coming to the last Boomer and Geo Live at the Paramount in this one would have seen, if we did this, Sean Morash in a diaper, in nothing but a diaper, and then Stu Feiner in nothing but the ball hammock pouch underwear. And we just don't want to do that to them. Now, it'd be funny, you know, he'd come out and be like, oh, ring and roll.
Yes.
Ball hammock pouch underwear on, but I just don't know. Do we want to do that to the audience? You know. So.
Well, the White Eagle Hall people—they got shorted. They just got to see Schwartz in a wrestling singlet, right?
That's right, wrestling singlet. So, I had a whole long text message back and forth with Schwartz yesterday, explaining his side of the story, and he felt some of the things that were being asked of him. He wasn't comfortable with. So I was getting mixed messages. Some people told me that he priced himself out. Schwartz is claiming that didn't happen.
There's always something. There's never just a clean break one way or the other.
That's not my fault.
So I said, I believed him. I said, Peter, I believe you. And he was a part of one thing. He said, I was ready to do the thing with the Islanders. He wanted to do that. And then we changed the idea. And he's like, you know, I just didn't feel comfortable being a giant turkey. I said, okay, it's fine.
I'm not taking any of the blame on this.
So it's fine. We'll find somebody else. We'll find a willing participant.
Right, I'm going to miss Peter.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he can go if he wants. I mean,
there's like a special expectation when he's involved.
No, I know. And he's been involved in all of the shows, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All of them. So he was. Wait. Yes. No.
The Paramount? He wasn't. At the Paramount last year, was he?
Oh, yes, he was. He was Frost. He was Schwartzy the Snowman.
Oh, that's right.
So what did we do? He was in the singlet for Schwartzy the Snowman. Did he do anything at the one in April? I don't think so. I don't think he was there for that one. Was he?
The second White Eagle Hall one.
Yeah. I do not think he was there for that one. I don't think we did anything. No, we did not, because we had Sean Morash be the human chicken cutlet. That's what it was.
That's correct.
That's right. So we had Schwartz slated for that, but then we decided that let's put the giant fan in there because Sean Morash said that I'd love that. And now looking back on that now with Tommy DeVito starting again, I mean, Sean's got that.
It's like perfect.
I mean, my goodness.
Yes. Things happen for a reason in this world, Eddie.
And I don't know. So
spiritually.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Paramount got to see Schwartzy the Snowman and Mirage Baby New Year.
Yeah, they did. That was the same show. Yes, they did. The Baby New Year. That I guess people were just like, Tom Izzo told me that he looked at some of the faces when that was going on and they just weren't appreciating Sean in the diaper. And then also what's funny about that is there was a fake cigar prop that he had his Baby New Year. And he climbs, this visual was unbelievable. He climbs into his crib in his diaper with his fake cigar. And as they're about to roll him out, Spike Eskin thinks it's a real cigar. And he slaps it out of his mouth. And he goes, "What are you doing with that? You're not allowed to have that." He's like, "Dude, it's a fake cigar." As Baby New Year in a crib, yelling at Spike, who looks like the way he looks.
You know? It's just behind the scenes internal, like, just visuals.
And what's wrong with him holding an unlit cigar?
He didn't, well, he just, I don't know. He just was, you know, Spike. I mean, that look, it was his last duty as brand manager at the Boomer and Geo Live White Eagle Hole with cheese.
And he was so nervous.
And at the very end, I break that glass. After this thing has gone so well, he's so proud, everybody's so happy, and I drop that glass, it breaks. He stared daggers into me.
Skinny, vegan, hipster.
As he was cleaning it up. He's picking up the pieces going like this.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, Jesus, man.
Making you feel bad. I know the type.
I was like, well, give me the guilt now. Like, we pulled this thing off. Somebody will sweep that up. It'll be okay. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, man.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we will we'll see what type of mess we can make tonight, but very excited to be at the Paramount once again.